Hi, I'm Ellen Moss. I'm a master's student at The Ohio State University, and my advisor is Dr. Ratan Lal. And I've been studying, specifically modeling, soil organic carbon in agricultural soils in Ohio. And the climactic drivers of decomposition is very key to this study. So I'd like to talk a bit about these climactic drivers. And first mention that most people understand the importance of organic matter, even if all they recognize it as is black, crumbly soil. Healthy mineral soil is about 5% organic matter, and this organic matter is about 58% carbon. So this comes to about 3% carbon in the soil, which doesn't sound like much, but soil to a 1 meter depth contains 3 times as much carbon as the atmosphere. So the land use changes that we make have a big impact on the climate. Conversely, the climate also has an impact on the decomposition of organic matter in soil. It's a two-way relationship. In fact, there are a lot of factors that influence decomposition, such as temperature, moisture, the chemical composition of the matter, soil texture, microbial processes, nutrient availability, carbon dioxide concentration, and pH. Three that I will focus on that are specific to climate are temperature, moisture, and carbon dioxide concentration. And so I'd like to start with a literature review to talk about these in depth and to put some context to my research. So first of all, temperature, the IPCC is projecting increases in temperatures globally, and these are representing two different scenarios, a low emissions and a high emissions scenario. And the low emissions, the 2.6, represents an assumption that we can decrease greenhouse gas emissions by about 70% from current levels by the year 2100. 8.5 is representative of continuing business as usual greenhouse gas emissions. And you can see the differences in warming, although in either case, they are projecting warming. So how does this affect decomposition? A good framework to understand temperature response is through kinetic theory as applied specifically to organic matter decomposition. So the first component would state that the rate of decomposition increases with an increase in temperature. In the literature, this is generally accepted. Even this has a little bit of controversy and some findings that contradict it, but generally this is considered sound. The second component would state that the rate of change of decomposition would be at its maximum at lower temperatures. And what this is referring to is the Q10, which is the rate that a reaction changes with a 10 degrees Celsius increase in temperature. And in most biological systems, this is generally considered like a 2 to 3. So it's increasing by a factor of 2 to 3 every 10 degrees Celsius. However, it's been observed in soils that this Q10 factor is substantially higher at very low temperatures. And there have been different models to try to represent this change. Although Davidson et al. In 2006 speculated that these higher Q10 values are due to substrate availability and not necessarily temperature sensitivity of organic matter. This last point has the greatest controversy right now, the greatest debate. And it would state that those reactions that require the highest activation energy are going to change at a faster rate than those with a slower rate of activation energy with rising temperatures. And there have been studies where it has shown that both slow pool and fast pool organic matter decompose at the same rate. So this is the greatest point of contention at the moment. But what's needed is to have research that looks at every component that's involved with the decomposition of organic matter, because each of those have their own temperature sensitivity. And when you take these processes collectively, then that will give you a good Q10 value of that particular soil system. And so just to briefly illustrate, substrate provides carbon at different rates, sometimes slow, sometimes fast. This diffusion of carbon through the soil can happen at different rates to microbes in the soil. And once the carbon reaches the microbes, depending upon many factors, the rate at which it's absorbed has different factors. And all of these have their own temperature sensitivity. So these need to be understood individually. Moving on to moisture, also the IPCC is projecting great changes in precipitation, some of which we just heard about in our last presentation. And what I'd like to point out is that a lot of areas key to agriculture are going to be experiencing more moisture increases, and particularly in the U.S. And this is important because decomposition is primarily driven by microbial processes, which are very sensitive to water. A low content is going to limit their growth because of low nutrients, and a high content is going to restrict their oxygen supply. And this is the classic soil moisture curve as related to microbial activity. And so we would expect that the greatest amount of decomposition will happen in this ideal moisture range, outside of which decomposition will be somewhat less. And of course, they're affected by various soil physics properties such as water movement and gas and solute diffusion. So what does this happen on the ground? My research, as I said, is to study organic carbon in Ohio and to model what is going to happen in the future under climate change. And two sites that I chose where I did no sampling myself. These are long-term agricultural sites studying plow tillage and no tillage. And these are two of the longest running experimental sites in the world. Hoytville has a silty clay loam soil and a slope that varies between 2.5% and 4.5%. And the pH ranges pretty widely from around 5 to 7.5, with it generally being lower in no-till than plow-till. The level in Hoytville, it's very level, it's less than 1%. Wooster is sloped with the 2.5% to 4.5%. It is a silty loam, and its pH ranges very similar to Hoytville, again with no-till generally being a little lower than plow-till. The climate data that was used for this study came from two sources. NOAA provided the observed climate through the observational period, the experimental period, from the 1960s to about 2015. And the Canadian Regional Climate Model was used for a scenario that would project a high emissions scenario. And you can see the differences in how the model, which is these dotted lines here, is predicting changes in temperature and moisture. So the solid lines are the observed data at those particular sites from the NOAA data. The dotted lines during the experimental period, this represents the model's attempts to reconstruct this historical data. And as you can see, it has a particular challenge with moisture. Going forward, it's projecting a little more expected level of increases in moisture and temperature. So this was the basis for the climate data with which I ran my two scenarios for this modeling run. Now, I don't expect anyone to read the text on here. I know it's small. Probably the only people who can read it will be those who view this online afterwards. But it's important to see this all together in context. And so I'll explain that these two sites here are Wooster. These two are Hoytville. Across the top are no-till, and across the bottom are the plow tillage. What's important for you to note are these lines. The green line is my low emission scenario. Because there wasn't a low emissions scenario created by the regional climate model, I constructed my own by, this is the observed data here, but projecting outward is the average of the 30-year climate starting at backwards from 2015 and then projecting outward. So this serves as a baseline, assuming there is no further climate change from today. The blue line represents the entire run is from the Canadian Regional Climate Model data. And as you can see, it struggles to represent the observed data, probably due to the vast increases in moisture deposition that it is modeling for this time period. But then projecting outward, you can see a difference and a slight drop. But the important thing is that when we look from 2015, which is this dotted line, and projecting forward, what is the trend? What's going to happen with the organic matter in the soil? And when we look at this whole time period, there were three treatments that under three different scenarios where there were increases in organic matter until 2070. So the Wooster, both sites at Wooster, the no-till and the plow-till, and the Hoytville no-till, show increases by the end of this period. The others all show decreases. Now, interestingly, Jones et al. In 2005 projected, using the same carbon model, which is Roth-C that I'm using, that beginning around 2060, and they projected to 2100, they were expecting that there would be drastic drops in organic carbon content globally. Now, their study was a global study, and in order to take local action, you need to have local results, and which is why I used a regional model, and I'm looking specifically in this area in Ohio. And so, I wanted to see what would happen at these sites if we start looking around 2050, which is about when they were expecting to start to see changes, and project out to the end of 2070. And what I found is that there's only one site that is showing an increase over this time period, which is the Wooster no-till. And all of them are showing decreases over that latter part of this century. So that roughly coincides with that study by Jones et al. What I did not include in this modeling run was the effects of carbon dioxide concentration. And historically, the CO2 concentration in the atmosphere is, because it's already higher in the soil, it was generally thought to not be a factor. However, with studies that are studying elevated concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, they are seeing increases in plant growth in most crops. And this did not coincide with observations in the soil where they were actually finding decreases in organic carbon content. So even though there seems to be more carbon being entered in the soil, the end result is that the total carbon is being reduced under elevated carbon dioxide scenarios. And the Earth models currently don't include this. It's called the priming effect in the carbon cycle, and so they are not taking this into account. But just to illustrate one theory as to why this might be happening, Carney et al. Explained that in these studies, you have an increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that happens first. This results in increased growth of crops both above ground and below ground, which results in a higher nitrogen intake. At the same time, while there's more nitrogen being taken in, there's also more carbon being put into the soil by this increased both above and below ground biomass. The result of this is that you have a change in the balance of the carbon to nitrogen ratio. So you have much more carbon and much less nitrogen. And now something I do want to point out is that the ratios that you see on the screen are not supposed to be representative of actual ratios. It's kind of exaggerated just to make sure that you can see the differences. So when you have this shift in carbon to nitrogen ratio, what can happen is that this will drop the bacterial population and increase the fungal population. And the phenoxidase enzymes are particular to recalcitrant carbon decomposition. And so the end result is that you end up having less carbon overall in the soil. Both the slow pool and the fast pool tend to be reduced, and so you end up with less carbon overall. Now, there are some questions about the long-term effect and can soil balance this out over time. It's being studied, and it's very difficult to study with these kinds of long-term studies. So what is really needed, regardless of some of the uncertainties in the science, is that it is clear that we need to be able to cool the surface of the soil. We need to manage moisture efficiently, and we need to be able to sustain inputs of carbon and nitrogen in the systems. And a colleague of mine made some interesting samples. He's in the room today, in fact. And he discovered that he measured a 7 degrees Celsius difference in soil temperature to a 1-inch depth in August between bare soil and soil that had like one or two leaves of litter on the soil, 7 degrees difference. And so it's clear that we need to be able to cover the soil in order to cool it and slow down some of this decomposition. And managing moisture, sustaining carbon inputs, there's a lot of research being done right now on residue retention and cover crops and mulching, and these can influence all of these components. Biochar also is being researched as a possibility for increasing and stabilizing carbon. So in summary, soil organic matter is a key indicator of soil health. And as such, we need to be able to understand all the factors that go into its decomposition and to be able to forecast under climate change what our stocks are going to do in the future. Unfortunately, there's no scientific consensus yet on elevated carbon dioxide effects, and even temperature is going through an evolution. But there does seem to be enough certainty at this point to say that climate change is going to reduce our stocks. And there is one prediction from 2007 that by 2100, soil may actually be a source of carbon dioxide emissions rather than a sink. So much more research is needed. Thank you for your time.